Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We have a lot to share. On the first day of this new year, I'm broadcasting live. I'm on the road. I will be continuing with part two of my predictions for the upcoming year. Interesting, in my last broadcast on New Year's Day, on Friday, I predicted things that happened over the weekend. Did you notice that as I speak in this moment, the New York stock market is down over 410 points, all because what I said would be happening with the bubble economies in the Eastern market and also coming here, but initially the safe haven would be the dollar. I'll give you more on all the different projections on healthcare, on boomers hitting 70, on a whole lot of topics a little later. But we're going to introduce the latest on sugar in Western diets, increasing the risk of breast cancer, tumors, and metastasis, University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. Also, if you can avoid certain foods, you could really help yourself avoid migraine headaches. I'll go over the foods that are high in the nitrates that can contribute in those vulnerable people. Not everyone is vulnerable, but for those who are, and which foods contain the sulfates or the sulfites, those are really bad for you, and which foods contain the monosodium glutamate. So once you know these, at least you'll be aware you can avoid them. Also, we'll look at a study of mammography screening is harmful. And should be abandoned. Who's saying this? The Journal of the Royal Society of Medicine from the Nordic Cochrane Group, the most respected independent scientist in the world. Any word on that in American media? None. Cooking oil industry contributes to inflammation and premature death. And a walk around the office can reverse vascular dysfunction caused by hours at a computer, University of Missouri, and more. Also today, we'll take a look at the drug overdose epidemic in the United States. It's the top cause of U.S. injuries. What's being done about it? Nothing. And terror attacks are great for U.S. arms makers. And in fact, ISIS just literally sent the bomb business booming. Also, the Saudi family, they are the ones now responsible for selecting the moderate jihadist who will take over Syria. And we, the United States, our State Department, John Kerry, the President, the National Security Apparatus, are all in favor of this. But hold on a second. About 4 o'clock this morning, I received an email and from a friend says, Gary, watch this. And I did. And it was very nonchalant. It was, you know, filmed by a pedestrian who's watching in this square as some people dressed in white walked over and to a group of people and just cut their heads off one after the other. Just people walking by, no one stopping and paying attention, just normal. And that was in Saudi Arabia. Oh, and by the way, they just cut the heads off nearly 50 people, including someone they should have thought about before they did it. And this was a Shia cleric. That got some people angry. There'll be a consequence. I'll explain what I believe the consequence will be. Also, hey, when you've got Fox News protecting all the police all the time, why should we pay attention to how many police killed civilians? How many civilians died in the last 12 months? Take a guess. Over 1,000. And where are those asking for investigation? Also today, I'm going to start a program of educating the public, those who are open to it, on the truth about our biggest failed public health policy, vaccination. Now, the theory is certainly laudable and reasonable. You want to protect people from diseases by vaccinating them with the same disease, but in small amounts to stimulate immune response, create antibodies. Okay, that sounds plausible. The trouble is, never been proven. There's never, in all of the study of science, there's never been one single double-blind placebo-controlled study, not once, on this. Well, they've had studies, thousands, but the studies use another vaccine. Well, then how can you say that it's an authentic study? You can't. That's the danger of fraudulent science, which represents almost all corporate science today. So Robert F. Kennedy will come on today in an audio clip and explain vaccines and the autism cover-up. We can say this unequivocally and absolutely with science to back it up. Vaccines have never been proven safe, not a single one, nor effective for any and every given individual. And yet you wouldn't know that by watching the reports in the mainstream media and the alternative media and the Daily Cause and all these other places that are supposed to do their homework. They're clearly not doing it in this case. Also, I grew up in a small community and went to the First Christian Church, was a junior deacon, and I paid careful attention to what was said by the preacher, who was very progressive, in my opinion, and the congregation, who was not. And I once asked the preacher, because he would always stand outside the doors after the sermon and shake everyone's hand and say hello to them as they left. And I was standing there one day, and I said to him, you know that a lot of these people coming here every week, they're just malicious gossips. That's all they do. That I don't know why they come here. And he said, well, it's not for me to judge why they come. You know, it's just me to have the sermon. Those who want to hear it will, those who don't won't, and those who could care less and just gossip about me, they can. And I was thinking about that when I took a look at all these mega churches, and there are a lot of them in America. Some are huge with 15,000 congregation. And some of those people who run those churches are into this prosperity notion of religion and wanting private jets. And they're sure that God told them to buy the private jets. And they convince their parishioners that. So we're going to play you a clip of Ken Copeland. And God gave him a private jet because he can now talk to God in a private jet, but he couldn't talk to God in coach. He's clear about that. You got to hear it out of his own mouth. And then you ask yourself, what does this say about his congregants who gave him this tens of millions of dollars to buy this? At the same time, they're very poor people in that congregation. And wouldn't that money have been better served? And you get the story. Also, I don't know how many of you have noticed that the examples shown in movies or television of young people today, with a few exceptions, are a group of young people who are just spoiled, petulant, narcissistic, self-entitled brats. They are just terrible. And yet, how did they get that way? I mean, on their own, there's no way this generation is going to survive the crisis that we have coming at us. There will always be some percentage, maybe 5%, who are developing in spite of their upbringing or because of their upbringing. But for the rest of their group, no way. Well, I wanted to have you listen to George Carlin talk about parents of honor students, because I had a chance on Saturday to speak in a very casual manner, didn't know it was going to happen, to two really super honor students. And within about 3 minutes of this conversation, I'm beginning to wonder, wow, how did you ever become an honor student? You're functionally illiterate. So I think we're going to need to hear from George Carlin on this. And what about the truth about the origins of ISIS? We still have people like John McCain someone should get him a rocking chair in a booth at the Museum of Natural History and just have people walk by and wave at him, you know, because he didn't seem to pay attention that he had dinner with a group of terrorists, including ISIS members. In fact, one of the leaders of ISIS. So the question is, how do you say we're fighting the terrorists when you're funding them? How do you say we should put Americans at risk with boots on the ground when you're putting weapons in the terrorists' hands that would kill the people you put on the ground? Is there a cognitive disconnect here? Is it time that we put a two-year limit on all legislators? And after 2 years, build them a farm in Tennessee beside the bluegrass studs. The bluegrass studs would be on one side, and the politicians could be in a corral on the other side. That's about how much respect I have for all politicians. And I have no respect at all for anything representing a bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. So we're going to discuss this. And, oh, did I forget? At least we forget how banks illegally kick black people out of their homes and how banks illegally do this knowing that there is no repercussion, not from the Justice Department, not from anyone. They just get away with it. As you see, we have a lot to share on our first day of the new year, looking at the problems and offering solutions. Let's begin. Oh, I wished I would have had this study when I debated the Dr. Elizabeth Whalen on NBC. She represented the American Council on Science and Health, which is a very pro-industry group. And her mentor was the what we call the cornflakes professor and the sugar lobby professor at Harvard, Dr. Fred Stair, who, by the way, was going to debate me in a national debate moderated by Barry Farber, never showed up. When we finally reached him, when Barry did, he was playing tennis, couldn't be bothered. I wished he would have shown up because I was well prepared based upon all the funding from General Foods and the sugar makers and the cereal makers, how he always had something good to say about them. In any case, our debate, Dr. Whalen and myself, and she was from Harvard, was, is sugar harmful? And it was Bob Kane's show on NBC, national radio. She offered the argument that it wasn't, and I offered the argument that it was. And I brought a lot of studies with me, at least every single quality peer review study I could find. And afterwards, I got to the elevator and I said, would you like to have these studies? And she just looked at me and, no. Well, to all those people who have the belief, rightly or not, that sugar is good, maybe you should take a look at University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, published in the peer review journal Cancer Research. Quote, I'm quoting verbatim, the high amounts of dietary sugar in the Western diet may increase the risk of breast cancer and metastasis to the lungs. The findings published in the current issue of Cancer Research demonstrated dietary sugar's effect on an enzymatic signaling pathway known as 12-LOX, which stands for 12-lipoxygenase. Quote, we found that sucrose, that's your white table sugar, intake in mice comparable to levels of Western diets, meaning what the average person consumes, led to increased tumor growth and metastasis when compared to a non-sugar diet. And that's a Dr. Yang, a professor of palliative and rehabilitation and integrative medicine. Quote, this was due in part to increased expression of 12-LOX and a related fatty acid, 12-HETE, end quote. Now, that should be of concern for anyone consuming any amount of refined sugar. You do not have that with the sugar that comes naturally from fruits, but you do have it when the sugar is processed. But it's not alone. There are now more than 300 studies from the peer-reviewed literature showing the problems with sugar as well as high fructose corn syrup. Previous epidemiological studies have shown that dietary sugar intake has an impact upon breast cancer development with inflammation that can play a role. Quote, the current study investigated the impact of dietary sugar on mammary gland tumor development in multiple mouse models. along with mechanisms that may be involved. And that was from a Professor Cohen, also a professor in the department. We determined that it was specifically fructose in table sugar and high fructose corn syrup, ubiquitous within our food system, which was responsible for facilitating lung metastasis and the 12-HETE production in breast tumor. So the information here is very straightforward. There is now no longer a scientific debate of does sugar cause health problems. The answer is unequivocally yes. From heart disease to impacting inflammation in the brain that would impact Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, to dental problems, to heart problems and diabetic problems, it should not be consumed. It's that simple. I was on a plane, and by the way, yesterday we filmed 9 people in my office in New York who have made remarkable recoveries using a plant-based diet. And in one of the individuals who had made a recovery, who started on the protocols recently, about 3 months ago, he was going to have his leg amputated. He had lost the circulation. He had really bad problems with his leg. And normally when people develop lack of circulation, discoloration of the skin, or gangrene, they amputate the toes, the foot, the leg. He is almost completely normal. You could not tell that there's anything wrong looking at his foot, so I had him had a before photograph and after. And when you think of how many thousands of people have amputations because of diabetic neuropathy, infections, this could save a lot of lives and a lot of suffering. But then someone said, Gary, do you know what could help migraines? Now, migraines are epidemic in our society. It's estimated most conservatively that between 45 and 50 million Americans deal with chronic headaches on a regular basis. And if you've ever had to deal with that pounding head pain, at some point in your life, you realize how debilitating it could be. Well, the question is not the headache episode or how painful it is or how regular it is. It's what is the trigger? Now, migraines are especially intense, and I've literally seen them become debilitating in people. But there are triggers that we now know, and we can do something about it. And let me just give you this brief overview. First, you have to look at what are called tannins, T-A-N-N-I-N-S. They're also known as tannic acid, and that's a water-soluble polyphenol compound. It's in many plant foods. And we believe that, in particular, in unripe fruits and vegetables, and it's there naturally. It's there to ward off predators and protect against parasites with their extremely bitter, astringent taste. Well, tannins have been found to prevent hardening of the arteries, but they're also known to trigger migraines. And here is what I would write down. If you are susceptible, if you're not susceptible, that's one thing, but if you are, it is. Coffee would be at the top of my list. Teas, wine, especially red wine, beer, beans. There are some fruits like persimmons or pomegranates, barley and sorghum, and in susceptible people, chocolate. Some people have a problem with chocolate. Other people do not. It actually benefits them. And in fact, you could have both simultaneously. The chocolate is going to help everyone with their heart and arterial linings, the endothelium. But in those who are chemically sensitive, while it's doing something good, it can also trigger a migraine. Now, the tannins aren't the only aspect of coffee, which I'm opposed to anyone consuming. Now, that's different than the green organic coffee bean. Now, in the bean, raw, not brewed, so we're talking about not coffee drinking, we're talking about the coffee bean, unprocessed, you have some phenomenally important phytonutrients, polyphenols, and antioxidants. So to have a green coffee bean extract in your diet is fine. But to boil it into coffee, that's the problem. And so people understand there's a difference. And here's the irony. Tannins are impacting coffee. They can trigger migraines. And then some people realize, well, the more caffeine I take, the less my migraine, not realizing that we're a little bit of caffeine, let's say 10 to 20 milligrams, will help you get rid of a migraine. The more you take, you create a threshold to where you get a caffeine buzz, and that will give you a killer headache when you try to go off of it. And that's why when people are giving up coffee, and at all the retreats, first thing you see is I ask people, are anyone here coming off coffee or sugar or drugs or alcohol? And no one's hand goes up. The next morning, all these people have these migraines. Of course, then you find out, well, yeah, they're on high coffee. And a lot of them are taking 3, 4, 5, 6 cups a day. And one person working a night shift was taking 12 cups a night. They went off coffee. And of course, had they told me this, I could have helped them by giving them some niacinamide or niacin and some other nutrients, feverfew, that can help stop the migraines. And that's how bad caffeine can be. Also, caffeine creates a high anxiety state. And for people who are high anxiety to begin with, and you give them caffeine, you can have an out-of-control personality. And a lot of people are diagnosed as bipolar based upon how much caffeine and when they're consuming the caffeine. They take the caffeine, they become hyper, even manic. And then they come down off the caffeine about 4 or 5 hours later. They seem to be normal. Then if they don't have more caffeine, they go into a lower place and become depressive. So this is what we call a brain chemical imbalance. It is not. It is the overstimulation of the brain by an exogenous item, in this case, caffeine. That's why I always get people off caffeine. But then you also have foods that are high in nitrates. Nite, N-I-T, rates, R-A-T-E-S. And those can really trigger migraines in a lot of people. The top of my list would be cured and smoked meats, cold cuts, bologna, hot dogs, bacon, and sausage. They all contain very high levels of nitrates. Also, be very careful because some water contains nitrates, well water or city water. And also a lot of the beans, canned beans and vegetables, and even packaged seafood, contains nitrates. That's why you got to get the organic ones that do not. And a lot of people are not aware that you should always wash the beans out of every can. That can wash off anything that was in there added as a preservative agent. Now, foods containing sulfites. If you go into a store and you see apricots and they're yellow-orangish, they've definitely got sulfites, because a natural dried apricot will turn into a grayish, brown, leathery, little bit of fuzzy look on the outside, and that's normal. That's healthy. That's fine. All you have to do with any fruit that's dried, just rinse it, eat it. It's good for you. But you see something that's soft and plump, moist and orange? No. No fruit looks as if it were just cut if it's been dried. From bananas that turn very brown and rubbery to apricots that turn leathery to nectarines, pears, and papaya that are very dark and a little tough, chewy, that's the right way. So if it looks normal, it's not natural, meaning it's got sulfites. And sulfites have been used for centuries to prevent browning discoloration of foods. They're also used as antibacterial agents in the fermenting industries like wine. And dried fruits are loaded with sulfites. The only two that I don't find them in are raisins and prunes. So dried fruits, lemon and lime juice, wine, molasses, sauerkraut and all pickled foods, and grape juice, unless you buy them organic. And it'll say organic, no sulfites. Now, also, you have to look at monosodium glutamate, or MSG. This can trigger migraines as well. And I would avoid fast foods, packaged noodles, cold cuts, sausages, salad dressings, and because many of those will contain MSG but won't say monosodium glutamate. It might say flavor enhancers, in which case they're always going to tell you that as little as possible, they're never going to tell you the full truth. So the best way to avoid is look at the ingredients. And if you see glutamate, if you see monopotassium glutamate, calcium glutamate, monosodium glutamate, or glutamic acid, if you see monoammonium glutamate, magnesium glutamate, yeast extract, that's a good way they hide it in under that title, yeast extract, and almost everything hydrolyzed, the hydrolyzation process, mainly in your Frank's and veggie packages, they're made from texturized soy protein, then they're going to have more often than not, not always, but more often than not, in the hydrolyzed protein, they're going to have MSG, calcium caseinate, sodium caseinate, let's say gelatin, texturized protein, and taramine-containing foods. Now, taramine, it would be cheeses, cheddar, blue, and Swiss, and that can trigger a constriction of the blood vessels, and that's bad. So you go non-dairy, you get a person to go organic, and frequently it's a whole lot of good that goes on. And finally, this is from the Journal of the Royal Society of Medicine, as published by the Nordic Cochrane Center. Quote, in almost perfect timing for Breast Cancer Awareness Month, a new study has just recently been published on mammography, one which once again shows that the practice of breast irradiation in an attempt to protect against breast cancer is harmful and should be abandoned. The study is, in fact, amply titled Mammography Screening is Harmful and Should Be Abandoned, and shows that even decades of screening has done nothing to reduce breast cancer mortality. This is even in the face of millions of new and supposedly early stage or stage zero cancers being diagnosed, which inflate survival rates. Previous research by the same author has concluded that up to 52% of women undergoing this form of breast screening as recommended will be overdiagnosed. However, it is hoped that as many of these women as possible obtain a second opinion. Another study, more readily available as it was published in 2012, examined the incidence of breast cancer across 32-year lifespan or time span of both localized cancers and late-stage disease. They found that the introduction of mammography in the United States was associated with an increase in early-stage breast cancer from 112 to 234 cases per 100,000 women. In addition, the rate of late-stage breast cancer decreased by only 8% from 102 to 94 per 100,000. Assuming the best mammography, 8 of the 122 new cases were women who had been saved by screening and not other factors such as reduction in smoking rates. So what it's showing is that 1.3 million women during the years from 1976-2008 should not have had procedures done. You know, they were not impacted, and yet they got the extra radiation and frequently radical mastectomies, etc. And also, for every hour that you're sitting at a desk, get up and walk for about 3 to 5 minutes. That can make a big difference. And this is from the University of Missouri in Columbia. Here's what it says, quote, across the country, many employees are seated at desks for the majority of an 8-hour workday. As technology creates an increase in sedentary lifestyles, the impact of sitting on vascular health is a rising concern. Now, researchers from the University of Missouri School of Medicine have found that when a person sits for 6 to 8 hours, vascular function is impaired. But by walking for up to 10 minutes after a prolonged period of sitting, vascular health can be restored. Quote, it's easy for all of us to be consumed by work and lose track of time, subjecting ourselves to prolonged periods of inactivity. This is according to Dr. Padilla, the professor of nutrition and exercise physiology at the school. However, our study found that when you sit for 6 hours straight or the majority of an 8-hour workday, blood flow in your legs is greatly reduced. We found that in just 10 minutes of walking after sitting for an extended time, reverse the detrimental consequences, end quote. So here's my suggestion. I don't believe most people sit straight for 6 hours. So I suggest that every hour, just get up and just do a brief little walk, just even some bends, just squatting down, half squat up. You're forcing the muscles to increase the circulation into the legs, and that will help you. And on your lunch break, take a break, get up and walk a little bit. And from a different perspective today on issues that matter, this is from Jared Keller from Pacific Standard. Quote, the 19-year-old engineer student was shot and killed by Chicago police officers, according to ABC 7 Chicago, after cops responded to a call at 4:30 a.m. from LeGreer's father saying his son was acting crazy and waving a baseball bat. LeGreer wasn't the responding father's only victim. Betty Jones, a 55-year-old anti-violence activist, mother of five, and LeGreer's downstairs neighbor, was caught in the crossfire and killed. An innocent lady got shot as well because the police were trigger-happy. LeGreer's mother, Janet Cooksey, told reporters, I went to the hospital. My son has 7 bullet wound holes in him. Amid the subsequent public outrage, beleaguered Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel was quickly called for police reform. This is by no means a single tragic story. As of December 24, police officers have fatally shot 965 Americans this year. And according to the Washington Post tally, of those 965, only 564 were armed with guns. About 90% were totally unarmed. And while the Post found that white police officers shooting unarmed black men, incidents that have sparked ongoing protests in cities across the United States, represented fewer than 4% of total fatal shootings, 2015. Quote, race remains the most volatile flashpoint in our accounting of police shootings. The Post said, although black men make up only 6% of the U.S. population, they account for 40% of the unarmed men shot to death by police this year. And among those victims, Tamir Rice, the 12-year-old boy who was shot and killed by a white Cleveland police officer, November 2014, Rice was holding a toy gun, and the police officer fired on the child within seconds of arriving on the scene. And the grand jury declined to indict the officer who killed Rice. The reason, according to the Cuyahoga County Prosecutor, Tim McKinney, we don't second-guess police officers. It's clear the officers are not criminal. So here is a question. What do you suggest be done to help lessen or substantially reduce the number of killings of unarmed individuals of all races, but in particular, the number one group as a group that are killed in the United States each year? They're not black, they're not Latino, they are Native Americans, and they have virtually no voice and little attention. I think it's important that we ask, what are the solutions? Is it better training? Is it psychological screening? If you know the system, then if you are given the idea within the system that you have to accept what goes on, then a psychologist is just as likely not, or a psychiatrist, to judge someone who shouldn't be a police officer as fit. And a prosecutor is just as likely not to suggest that, well, I got to rely upon these police officers in other situations, so do I want to alienate them? The system itself is broken, not just individual incidents. And by no means are all the police officers who are trying to do their work and who are de-escalating violence and are not going to pull a gun and shoot someone, they are not being acknowledged, and they should be. I have friends who are police officers. Two of them, three of them, in 20-plus years each of service in New York City, in Bedford-Stuyvesant, never drew their service revolvers. They always found other ways to deal with crimes or conflicts. So we must acknowledge that there are those officers who are not going to hurt people, wouldn't want to, and would do all they can to stop. But what about the ones who are hurting people, profiling people, arresting people, injuring people, tasering people, killing people? What do we do with them? How do we change that system? I have my ideas, but I'm interested in yours. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And also, we're starting this new year with more people listening live over the telephone or a listening device than any other radio program in the Western Hemisphere. That's a whole lot of programs. We're now shooting towards 25 million. Let me repeat that, 25 million minutes listening. So we get a lot of people on the phone, and it's good because sometimes you're not by your terrestrial station, sometimes you're not on the internet, or don't even use the internet, but everybody can use a phone, put it on speaker. And that number, if you don't have it, please write it down, 712-775-6850, 712-775-6850. And I'm always getting feedback that taxi drivers, a lot of them, are tuned in. So for all the taxi drivers listening right now, thank you for having it on and for sharing the insights with those that you care about in your lives. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a brief break and come back. We have a lot to share today. Please stay with us. That's just a little tribute to one of the fine singers who passed over the holiday, Natalie Cole. Several people reached out to me when they heard that she had hepatitis C and had liver problems. And we sent message to her that if she was interested in speaking with people who have had hepatitis and reversed it, I'd be happy to work with her. Unfortunately, never heard back. But we're always there for people who have a need, famous or not, doesn't matter. And we're always going to be showing that there's another approach. Now, Matt from New York. Matt, your suggestion for how to deal with those individual police who have committed crimes and who will continue to commit crimes, and how so little justice is served for those who have been victims of these crimes. Your thoughts, please.
Yes. Good afternoon, Gary, and Happy New Year to you and the BAI family. It's actually my M-A-A-T, the Kemetic Egyptian Principle of Right, Balance, Truth, and Justice. First of all, I believe it was on the Black Agenda Report that they brought in a U.N., some sort of a UN hearing, and the attorney brother who testified said that the monster, meaning the way the police operates itself, has to be eliminated. So I would suggest that you listen to that, because he has some good ideas. I think that, first of all, you need a special prosecutor that's not an elected position, such as recently set up in New York State with Snyderman, who does get elected as attorney general. And you also need to change the overall culture of militarism and warring. So, you know, when you war around the planet and cause instability, the same thing eventually definitely comes home.
Okay, those are all very valid inputs and insights. Thank you very much. We'll take one more. Rob from New Jersey. Hi, Rob, your turn.
Oh, good afternoon, Gary. How are you?
Good.
I have to say I completely disagree with what your comment of the system being broke. I think it's functioning marvelously. You have huge concentrations of corporate and government power. You have the suspension of habeas corpus. You have Obama's kill list. You're going to probably see the TPP pass, the massive surveillance system. I mean, it's functioning perfectly, and the police killing all these people, unarmed people, is sort of like a challenge in a sense, because what they're saying is, we got the power and there's nothing you can do about it. So, yeah, the system is functioning the way it's intended to function. It's not broken.
And your solution is?
Oh, well, first of all, you have to have an educated, enlightened public with a common vision of the kind of society that they want to live in. I mean, that's a general first-hand statement. And I don't see any kind of thing like that being done. You listen to random conversations among people, no matter what what location they're in. They're talking about sports, or they're talking about themselves, or they're talking about girls, or they're talking whatever it is. It's not about the important things that are occurring in this society. There's a looming crisis that there's a small window of opportunity to act in, and these people are going about their daily business as business as usual, completely cut off from reality. It's sort of like The Matrix, if you've ever seen the movie. The average person is living in a bubble, an insulated bubble. They can't be reasoned with, and they distort information that, and they're unwilling to face reality. So that's a big, big, big problem. This society didn't get this way to this extent because you have an energized public that are well-educated and enlightened. It's the opposite. It's a withdrawal and a retreat from the public sphere and retreat from, I guess you could say, human situations. So, I mean, it's a big, 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 massive problem. And the other thing is that there's a huge population. So how many representatives do you have? Let's say 1,000?
Okay, but what I ask you, Rob, I just want to know what is – you're telling us your perception of the problem – and I'm sure there are people who would agree with that. Some may disagree. But we're looking for a solution. And I'm interested in that. Do you have an actual solution you'd like to share with us?
Everybody has to take stock of themselves.
Okay, that's good. That's taking stock in yourself and asking yourself, by staying silent, I'm inferring this from your answer, by staying silent and not committing to social justice issues, are you then allowing people to feel that they can get away with things as a society, individually, or a group, a collective? Whereas if we as individuals said, this is wrong, no one should be stopped and searched just because of the color of their skin or what they're wearing, and we shouldn't be throwing people in jail for a law that we shouldn't have had on the books to begin with, we're on drugs, and what the consequence of that is, then we have to repeal these laws. We have to open up these prisons. We have to rehabilitate people and allow them to become constructive members of society. And we have to expunge their records so that is not limiting how they are perceived by future employers. Then we have to give them the counseling they need to deconstruct the environment in prison to one of a different type of mindset they need in society. Thank you very much. Hello to...
Hi, it's Jeremiah calling from Jersey City.
Hi, Jeremiah.
I have so many things to say about this topic, but first of all, I think The same way we put teachers in a situation where our expectations are really unrealistic and don't account for what's going on in the community of a student or the household and all the other things, I think police officers epitomize that in terms of just people being put in a ridiculous situation. I mean, very violent people are not easy to apprehend and can do a great deal of damage to other people, as we know. So this notion that we can just have this kind of force of underpaid, undereducated people and say, oh, yeah, go out and collect all the bad guys and stop terrible people from doing terrible things is absurd. I think there needs to be much more community involvement in terms of safety. And I think everybody should be trained in safety, in martial arts, in overall community safety. Like, one thing I've realized from interacting with some police officers is that there are incredible crimes happening within a 5-block radius of me. And had I not had a conversation with a police officer or listened to a police scanner, I wouldn't have even known. Someone was murdered 3 blocks away from me just yesterday. Or someone was raped, and we see an old brown car driving out of a gas station. Well, everyone in the area should know. Look for an old brown car. But in this age of social media, security information is not disseminated in a community at all, let alone well. So
I think those are very constructive inputs, and I thank you for that. I'm sorry we don't have more time, but I'm going to limit a lot of what I have to do today and carry on with this tomorrow. Thank you very much. I want to spend a little time on some of the issues I see coming at us and that we should deal with. And I'm going to go through these rather quickly. First up, I believe that when it comes to domestic issues, one of the most important facing us is surveillance. Surveillance will likely increase, and the post-Snowden reforms will be rolled back. Why? To keep pace with the continual rise of violence and terrorism by domestic right-wing groups. Remember, this audience knows this. The vast majority, 98% of all terrorist attacks in the United States, are conducted by domestic, non-Muslim individuals and groups. The same as in Europe, where right-wing, white supremacist, fascist groups are larger and more public. And aside, due to the large influx of Middle East refugees into Europe, right-wing extremist parties will gain popularity. So expect to see a lot of brutal beatdown and confinement, in effect, detention camps of these people coming. No one's asking, why are they coming? They were happy where they were at until we intervened. Libya, we intervened. And all the other countries that are seeing this, either environmental crisis or because of civil war. And we have our footprint on that. So now you're going to see reaction from white right-wingers. And with rising anxiety across the nation and economic uncertainty, expect false propaganda and falsified stories and engineered narratives in the media throughout this country. Already the UN has predicted that close to 50% of the world's population will experience a water shortage in the next 14 years. So I believe it'll be in the next 5 years. So that's going to gradually trend with worsening each year. So you're going to see tens of millions of water refugees, probably accumulating within the next 5 to 10 years to 100 million. Well, if Europe can't absorb in a constructive way, in a positive way, 1 million, what exactly are we supposed to do with 100 million? And that's what's coming now. That's not political. That's from environment. And you're going to see more environmental refugees. And also look for the biggest problems being, here are the hot zones. Australia, I believe, is virtually, the future is dismal. Also the United States, 20 states, China, India, and South Africa. And here's where Canada becomes a positive, Russia becomes positive, and Scandinavia becomes positive, at least environmentally. It'll also be the new breadbaskets. I predict that Canada, Russia, and Scandinavia will be the largest producers of basic food items for the future because they will have the climate and the water where their countries will not. There will also be stronger efforts made in Washington over gun control, and that is, in effect, where people will be told, you can't have it. I see that as a flashpoint. With our health, just this month, baby boomers are now moving into their 70th year. This will mean that a huge rise in health care needs. It is simply not possible to help all the people who are going to need health care, including mental health care, because of the damage to the immune systems and the brains, the inflammation, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, memory loss. It's going to become a pandemic. 76 million baby boomers, I predict at least 30 million of them are going to be susceptible and having problems. I also predict that this year we will be approaching $4 trillion in our healthcare system. $4 trillion. I also believe that one of the worst things ever is the Obamacare. We should have a single party, and we should also have a private party. If you want private insurance, you should have the right to have it, and you pay the premium, and you get whatever medical care you get from that. But I believe that if we had a universal health care and then had preventative programs, we could prevent 80% of all the illnesses in the United States, in which case that would save us at least $2 trillion a year. And that's where the energy should go. On the economy, virtually every major analysis now predicts a global economic crash this year, now, as we're speaking. I'm looking at the International Monetary Fund's documents, the Bank of International Settlements, Noriel Rubini, J.P. Morgan, Chase Research, economists from the left and right. We are in a recession, though some parts of the economies are in recession. The depression is for those 270 million who are deeply in debt, virtually debt peonage, and being punished and prosecuted for profit by the private industry. Until there is a general strike, until they can be organized because they have no advocates, until they can stand up and sit down, could you imagine what would happen to the 270 million who are going to be suffering or are suffering if they created a unified force? Also, the Federal Reserve, by raising the interest rate even small amount, it is going to mean that everyone's mortgage is going to go up and the cost of everything will increase. And that means that manufacturers are going to be impacted because the more something costs, the fewer people are going to be able to afford it. Now, here are the figures you're not looking at if you're in the general media. Here's what concerns me. I look for the symptoms before I see the major catastrophic effect. Retail and wholesale sales have dropped the most since 2008 meltdown. U.S. factory orders have dropped the most since the collapse of Lehman Brothers. Layoffs, outsourcing, and closed factories are increasing. And that means more unemployment or more people trying to get jobs and cannot find them and dropping out. The real U.S. gross domestic product growth has declined and even turned slightly negative in the last quarter. U.S. export growth has been steadily weakening for the past 6 months. Why should anybody buy anything made in America when we have a strong dollar, in which case the cost of buying it into another country is higher when they can go to China or other countries? So we need a completely new way of examining the World Trade Organization. We shouldn't be in it. We shouldn't have any of these treaties, because until such time that we create a complete working environment where we can have our own consumers purchase and afford our own goods because they're making a living wage, and free them of debt burden by forgiving these debts, then all we're going to have is America. And this is important, so please listen carefully what I'm saying. Right now, America is racing to compete against Bangladesh, China, India. That means there's only two ways of doing it. One is you drop the price of everything so that you can sell to people outside the United States, like the European market, which is the largest purchasing market in the world. Or you drop the price of labor so low, with no guarantees, no sick pay, nothing, and so you can afford the cheap labor. That's how corporations keep their profit and their jobs, by showing we've cut expenses. Yes, what expenses did you cut? You cut your inventory, then you cut salaries, then you cut jobs, and you start automated process, and then you outsource to other countries. So America is competing against itself. We are economically cannibalizing ourselves. And only a fool could not see this. So we will never win against other countries because they don't have any consumer rights at all. So all of the hard-won labor rights of the last 100 years are being swept out the door by all of the people in the administrations because they only care about the deals they make with major corporations. So you're being sold out. The unions are selling you out, if not the rank and file are not, but unfortunately, the leadership frequently is. So just understand, if you can make a dress in the United States, but your labor is more expensive than a dress made in Bangladesh, and they're making 14 cents an hour, they're going to say, well, we can bring in cheaper labor, or we can have Bangladesh make this dress, and it gives you no bargaining position. So we have to, as a public, say, we will not buy that not made in the United States. So demand of yourself. If it costs you a little extra, do so. Buy it in the United States. Buy it organic. Buy it with either union-made or fair wage-made. And that's one way we can bring more jobs and better standard of living back to the United States. And corporate profits are finally declining. There is enormous debt, $26 trillion of corporate debt. That's just corporate debt. The states, every single state in America has major debt from $500 billion, and they cannot close this debt. So you're going to see states can't default, but they will no longer have a credit rating, but cities can default. You're going to see hundreds of communities go bankrupt. In the state of Texas alone, I did the research, and no one else has on this, so I can tell you that with accuracy, there's 1,227 communities that are low on water or running out of water, representing 6.2 million citizens. That's in one state. So that's, what do you think is going to happen when those people no longer can get water brought to them or bring it out of a well or municipality because the aquifers are drained? They're going to move. Property values are going to crash. State budgets are going to crash with them. Infrastructure and services of the state will collapse. This I see happening this year. And also, students are hard hit. We should forgive their $1.2 trillion debt completely. Let them start from scratch. And you have a lot of what are called unicorns. These are $1 billion for startup companies. That's insane. And stay away from Wall Street. Wall Street is just a fixed market, and it doesn't have your interest at stake. I believe that we should be looking at trade skills. I believe that if you're in a susceptible position, you should be learning how to grow food. You should be learning how to be self-sufficient. You should learn those trades such as carpentry, plumbing, electrical, masonry, painting, the things that actually people hire or need or you can exchange. And I believe that we'll have more shared living this year and more homesteading, more self-sufficient businesses, more rural living than at any time in recent history. And that would be a wise place to begin. Now, tomorrow I'll bring you up to date on other things, but that's all we have time for today. I see for 270 million Americans this being the worst year since the Great Depression. For about 55 to 60 million Americans, it'll be fine. They'll actually prosper. So you're going to have more of the have-nots having, and you're going to have more of the have-nothings, or have-nots will get worse, and the haves will prosper. So you're going to see an enormous division in quality of life, standard of living, and access to resources and affordable resources. But the average American isn't going to have any of that. And on top of it, a corrupt and different government and a corrupt and completely compromised media. So you're not even going to get the truth when you need it most. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.